gentlemen, boys and girls, product owners all over this great big world, including the people listening in San Jose, Costa Rica. Welcome back to Deliver. This is your Agile Product Owners Podcast. My name is Corey Bryan, and I want to know how your product is doing. Is it on the right track? Is it doing well? Are you serving your customers' needs or not? I'm curious how folks are actually doing with their products and where they're at. Maybe an episode later. I don't know. Just random thoughts that pop into my head from time to time. So today we will have an episode about a hack that I've been applying and I think would be useful to more folks. So we'll get into that in a little bit. The first couple of things I saw in the last few weeks. First one was from Jeff Gotthelf, and it's an article called 7 Things I've Learned from 2 Years of Working from Home. So now that everybody's been working from home in the last 2 years, what are some of the things that have come up in his mind? A couple that I liked. Number 4, the value of your work doesn't depend on where you are. Some people complain that Jeff charges the same amount whether he comes in or not. Some people have done the same thing with jobs where they want to pay you less because you're remote instead of in the office. It's interesting to see the companies that do that and the ones that don't. The ones that think that your value is your value, doesn't matter where you are. I like that. Number 5 is that he's trying a little bit harder for meetings with audio setup, video setup. And when you do that, the bar is surprisingly low to have a good experience. I like that concept of trying to improve just a little bit on a variety of things and see the difference that it makes. The bar is super low. I like that comment in there. And then 7 is redefining your life around your priorities. And in this, he says, and I agree, family is greater than work. So you work as you can. You work around the family, and you see how that fits. Having breakfast with your kids, being able to work out, being able to stop at a reasonable hour. Those are things that help you define, redefine your life around your work. And I like that as well. So he's got a few others in there. And then there was a video that he shared. I think this was a talk a while ago. It's a very short minute length video about how he's talking at Amazon. They release 5 times a minute. Some customer somewhere sees something new 5 times a minute. That's 5 times a minute they take tiny little risks. And the reason that's important is because if it works, they can figure out how to scale it. If it doesn't work, then they can figure out why and what to do about it. So I like the way that he talks about this. It's something I shared over on LinkedIn and a lot of people reacted well to. So I want you to see it too. Go take a look and see if that mindset that he gives, which I think is a great one, is something that either you apply or you can think about. And then I saw an article from Bruce McCarthy, How to Ignore Customer Requests. I love the title of that. In that, he says that the real trouble is the solution that your customer has come up with is probably not the best one and almost certainly would not solve the underlying problem in a repeatable, broadly applicable way. This is the customer just says, do this, move this button 3 pixels to the left, make it blue, and you do it. Or they tell a salesperson to do that, and the salesperson says, do it. Or they tell the CEO to do that. Customer requests are not the best. So he also says many requests are just a customer's best guess as to a solution to a problem they haven't articulated yet. So he's got a really good dialogue in this article about how to drill into it. It's something I've been doing a lot of thinking about too. Again, we've talked about multiple different practices, frameworks, tools to use to help you drill down into these, understanding the customer requests, and that's really what it's about. And then he's got a couple of different techniques that he offers as well. The one that I really like is understanding their role. When you get to this person, the person who has the problem, don't ask them about your product or their request right away. Instead, find out what they do, what's important to them in their job or lifestyle, what their goals are, and where they're frustrated. This will provide context for the request. That's the part that I really like doing, understanding why a customer is using our product, how it fits into their day, how it fits into their job, their overall job. Their job should not be using our product. Their job is something else, and our product helps them do that or should help them do that. And let's understand that a little bit more. And once you do that, then you can to his point in the title of the article, safely ignore those customer requests because you solve the customer problems. And that is better. And I like that. So check out those articles from Jeff and Bruce.
No doubt that this magnificent vessel will give excellent value for the dollars she'll be earning.
I've solved a particular problem in the recent past, and it's different than how most people talk about it. So I wanted to share and see if it might be of use to you also. It's a hack that once I change the way I think about or approach something, it really does make it easier to get things accomplished. It's a simple thing at its core, too. I've changed most problems into a budgeting problem. I've done it with food, with velocity, with priorities, and most anything else that has a limit to it that I don't like. I've stopped looking at it as the problem with X and start looking at it as this is how much I have to spend on problem X. This idea isn't new. Budgets are all around us. There are also plenty of things I've read about not doing things this way. When you hear someone say, don't pack your sprints or play backlog or team Tetris, they are talking about this type of thing for different reasons. And by the way, I agree with the notion of not packing sprints just because you can, which is using numbers and shapes of stories to push to the team. I thought of it initially like this. Every time I pack the vehicle to travel for Christmas or something like that, to me, I see a game of what's the best way to get our luggage in there. That is the game that I've created and one that I really do enjoy playing. The reasons I've seen people suggest against it are both practical and theoretical. I believe this is given as advice because people forget why they are building and delivering the product for the customers. They only view this as a means to an end, a number target, and an elegant solution to an uncared about problem. I'll agree that you should not mindlessly stuff story points to where they fit in a sprint. Don't organize your sprint backlog by what fits number-wise. Don't plan for 40 points and grabbing a one-point story from the lower third of the backlog. If it wasn't that important because of the value it could deliver already, doing it now because you can, because it's a one-point story and you need to fill that sprint, isn't the best option. I'm sure the team and the customers could benefit more from a small experiment, a tweak, or something to change the way they're already doing that will give you much more value for that 1 point. So if you catch yourself or others doing this mindless packing, please stop. Figure out what you're really trying to do and work towards that instead. Once you have the goal that you're trying to hit or target that you're aiming for, then let's plan the budget for how to get there. As I've done this for more things, the upside that I have seen is that it removes the stress and overthinking involved with typical planning. It presents it as a math problem. Math to me is more solvable than some of the other ones we face. It should always be done in service to a larger goal, wherever that is, budget to solve that goal. I'm not worried about velocity anymore. It's changed to, this is our budget for a sprint. So which of these things help us reach our goal? Or we have X amount of hours for this month for design research. How shall we spend it? This opens up the discussions to help pick the most important things that move us toward delivering value. At the core, that's the two questions to ask that helps me immensely for this. And these are the basic budgeting questions. What's the limit I have to spend? And how much does each thing cost? So to do this, yes, you need some kind of a number or quantity, that story points or number of stories or hours, whatever. It's a number. Numbers are helpful, so let's use them wisely and correctly, not abuse and manipulate them. Another useful frame is something that I've talked about before in episode 51 on accounting, episode 55 on time management, and many of the other instances I've talked about planning and priorities, and that is allocation percentages. If upfront you know that you need to spend or are going to spend 20% of the budget on bug fixes, then you can make sure that happens. Or if it doesn't happen, you should know how much you missed it by and why. Conversations that occur then are interesting. Instead of talking about a big story, you talk about a story being too expensive. Instead of getting stuck in negotiating points, you talk about ways to make something cheaper. Cheaper to do, cheaper to learn, cheaper to deliver. The questions become, what can I afford, as opposed to when will it be done? I like this line of questioning better because it's flipped the problem on its head. No longer do you need to try to get an unreasonable amount of things done in an unreasonable amount of time, but you're now seeing what fits into your budget for it. This also helps with discussions with others, the team, or people in the organizations who are interested. If you talk about the budget that you have for something, their ask may fit into that or not, and they can see what limits you're dealing with. This idea of applying budget-wise thinking to the problems you are facing as a PO isn't the only spot where this is beneficial. The idea of funding teams and having a budget for them instead of funding a project or number of developers is very linked to this idea. How much of the team's time are we going to spend on that new search feature? How should we budget for it? What if the team comes back with a cost of 2 months versus a desired or unreasonable 1 month? Then we can see what we can cut to meet that budget, or we can budget for more if it's really desired. We're not budgeting for our priorities, and that's what we want to do. We have identified the limits that we are working with, and we've shown that we care more about some things than others. The limits help us. They showed us where we're doing too much and where we have more to do. And inevitably, what happens when the budgeted amount isn't enough? What if the people you're talking to are not satisfied with spending only 40% on new requests or want you to invest in more people, money, or effort into their most important project or customer? Well, then you get to talk with them about how to raise the overall budget and how that change that they want impacts the other things that they have budgeted for. Most businesses and organizations are run by their budgets anyway, so this line of thinking should be useful and familiar to them. Most businesses and organizations have not thought of the product teams or IT this way before either. It's a cost center or a side project, and this way is different. The way I apply this really is no different than your typical household budget. I'm trying to teach my daughter this lovely concept too. Yes, having money for clothes is nice. Having money for gas and food is nice too. Which is more important? Or which can you reduce that which you spend to get what you really want? Also, not every meal needs to be from a restaurant, because that adds up. When I look at my calorie budget for the week, if Crumble Cookie has a peanut butter cookie I absolutely enjoy, and I must have one of those 9 or 10s on that 1 to 10 scale, then I'm going to find a way to account for those 630 calories on a day and still hit my weekly macro targets, because getting something like that is important to me. Budgeting how many decisions a day or a week I want to make. Budgeting how many bullshit meetings I can attend. How much time I want to spend reading for my own improvement. How many hours I need to sleep. All of that can and should be budgeted. Budgeting helps me think, plan, and execute. Not overthinking or overplanning, just enough to see what I really want, what I need to do to get it, and what the short steps I'm planning to take next are, or could be. Knowing what is important, what is more important than others, and finding a way to get that is what this budgeting technique is for. Use the numbers, plan ahead, and reach your goals, whatever they are. This is a solvable problem. This is able to be figured out. Use a budget to help. Thank you for writing in and supporting the show. Also sharing things around. Lots of people sharing around last episode with Andrew. Some of the things are going to change. I really hope that helps. I'm really interested to hear what you did as a result and what happened. So please, if you have questions about product ownership or anything else, you can find the show on Twitter at Delivercast or email us at Delivercast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show, you can buy me a coffee through the links in the description or set up some consulting time at SeekTaiDo.com. Couple of questions I saw floating around the internets. One was from Chad. Advice on founding team organization Kanban. Says, I'm working with a founding team of 4, trying to get my feet wet with Kanban, specifically to see how we can benefit from a higher level. We don't work on the same types of tasks. No one can help the engineer with actual code. No one can help the marketer. However, without consistently seeing what everyone's doing, without seeing what they're into, who knows? Additionally, we have a problem with multitasking like psychopaths. So forcing us to constantly break things down and push one piece through at a time might be helpful. We're making tons of progress and doing very well objectively, but I know we could be doing better. Part of me feels sheepish to try to implement even something basic with my current understanding. I don't know what the right questions are. Okay, founding team organization for Kanban, what are the right questions? I think the way you're working now, again, the best thing that I usually do with Kanban teams or any kind of process flow is, what are you doing now? What are the steps you're taking to get value out in your organization? Whatever that is, marketing, product, sales, hiring, kitchen remodels, whatever. What are the steps you're taking? Start putting those up on a board and putting those up there, sharing those with everybody. People will change it. You'll see where you're wrong. You missed a step. You need to add a step, blah, blah, blah. Start there. Start with what you're doing now and then make it visible. Get people to talk about it. If somebody can help, great. If you can't help and that's a single dependency, see if you're okay with that single dependency. See if that's something that everybody cares about. Typically, when you see this, you see something like there's six developers and one tester on the team, and the tester is always backed up. That's obvious from the amount of stickies that are in front of the testing column, which you shouldn't have, but maybe you do. Maybe you start with that and say, look, it seems obvious, or it seems to me, that there's lots of stickies here waiting on one person to do. So could we get this person some help, or what could we do to eliminate the fact that there's so many in front of this? I think the right questions are, is this the way we want to work, or what could we do better? Just a little bit better. Not ideal, not perfect, not where do we want to be in 5 years. What could we do to make what we're doing now better? That to me is the first good question once you have that set up. But I think doing that is a great step. And then I was perusing the Agile for Humans community, Ryan and Todd's community, and saw a couple questions there that I wanted to take a crack at. One is from Julia, who says, I want to ask your opinion about stakeholders who are asking for a demo's weekly alignment meeting because not everyone can make it to participate in the sprint review. What do you think about it? I have a few thoughts. One, why couldn't they make it to the original sprint review? That's a sign that your organization is not really seeing or not really treating what your team is doing as important. If they're not willing to show up. Could be lots of reasons. Could be their own calls. Could be their status meeting. I don't know. But that's a sign that your work is not seen, or the team's work is not seen as important as something else that they could be doing or should be doing. So part of the reason is find ways to get them more interested in it. Or part of the answer is find them more ways to get interested in it. Show the value. Show value that they care about. That's one thing, especially if it's the player type stakeholders, the people that really are interested in it, not just the people you keep advised. For those people and for people who can't make it to the meeting that fit that type of category, I'm fine with either a report or a video or something like that. Typically, I will record the sprint reviews. And I will send that out after. So if somebody wants to see it, I'll put time codes in and say, look, we talked about this capability that we're adding or this change that I put at this time. If you want to watch it, go watch it. You want to ask questions. But I don't like doing multiples of those because that gets into a subservient model. And we're not about that. We're into collaboration mode. So we'd like to collaborate with you at this time, show you what themes I'm working on, get your feedback on that. And here it is. I typically will talk with people about that. But rescheduling these things is a no-go for me. That's one of those. It is when it is. And if you can make it, great. If you can't, send somebody else to answer questions for you or watch the recording. And hopefully, at some point, they start catching up and moving things around to attend your sprint review or to attend the team's sprint review. And if you can do that, then you start winning in my book. There's a question from Shivam. It says, I have a scenario-based query where a feature got descoped from a sprint backlog by the PO on the fifth day of a two-week sprint. He's asked the team to stop the development on the feature as product management wants to redefine the requirements, which will take a minimum of 2 weeks. He says, please consider that the feature was part of our sprint goal and the team has already spent 5 days of effort in developing this feature. Two questions. One, how do I put the lost efforts in team's velocity or the current sprint? And two, should we modify the sprint goal in the middle of the sprint as important part because it's been descoped now? Please share your opinions. Okay. This can happen for sure. I think I've talked about this before that it's only happened to me once. But the two questions that you have, Shivam, how to put the lost efforts in team's velocity in the current sprint? You don't. It's done. It's gone. They're done because your sprint goal, which is the answer to the second part of your question, should you modify the sprint goal? Do not modify the sprint goal. Your sprint goal is now changed. So basically, you've canceled the sprint. So you're halfway through a sprint, and a change happens that the sprint goal now needs to shift or change. So the current sprint is canceled, and I would sit down and come up with a new sprint goal for the remainder of this time box that you have. So now you have a 1 week sprint, basically 5 days. And what are you going to be able to accomplish as a sprint goal for that 5 days? Pull in the stories that you need to accomplish that sprint goal for those 5 days and go from there. And then when the other thing is figured out, then that becomes the next sprint's goal, possibly. Actually, at that point, it sounds like it's the sprint after the next ones that you'll be doing that. But don't worry about the team's velocity. It's gone. It's done. It's sunk costs. Don't worry about it. And you're going to have a new sprint goal for the remainder of the time box that you can go from there. So you'll have a short sprint, and that's okay. Again, what we're trying to accomplish is delivering value to the customers every sprint. And if we can't do that, that should be the measure of progress, not velocities. Really like those questions, Chad, Gilio, and Shivam. That will do it for this episode. I hope you have a great day. Thank you all so much for listening. All the opinions expressed here are mine. Find more. It is Corey Bryant on Twitter. That is episode 139 delivered. Go out and own the outcome.
This show is part of the Agile Podcast Network. For more shows and information, visit agilepodcastnetwork.com.